Give you a bit of a backstory about me meeting Tanya. Basically, it was only last week where, unfortunately, Gabby Kowalski had to pull out due to illness. And I scoured through LinkedIn and I saw Tanya's name, and I'd actually heard of her name before. So we touched base. We had a quick chat. We met up in the city last Thursday. Had a great chat and connected really well. Just within the first 5 minutes, I knew Tanya was someone who I wanted to get down in front of you guys. Her ideas around sales strategy and sales process is something that I don't think we spend enough time on. I think we do it a lot of ad hoc. We sell to anybody who walks through the door. There's not a system to the way we do it. So looking forward to the next two sessions with Tanya. So once again, please give her a big round of applause and enjoy.
Thanks very much, Steve, for having me here. And I've got to make a comment, Steve, on your academy. Now, I've been to many days like this and participated in many events myself, and it's really good to see an organisation taking it the next step. Because you know what it's like. I'm going to share so much information with you, and Adam's already shared lots of information. And then you go back to your office and you start to forget it. And you start to forget to implement it. And you think, gosh, that was a really good idea that Adam gave me, but where do I get the information again? Well done on the academy, because there's very few people that do it. So congratulations. Now, Wollongong. Thank you, I love Wollongong. We do spend a lot of time down this way. My favourite place to take my children camping is Coaldale. It's Coaldale Beach, right on the water. Always get blown away, but that's part of the fun. we come down here, we try to come down once a month over summer. So beautiful place, and thank you for having me today. Now, I loved the fact that Adam, I was going first this morning and then Adam was coming after me, but you know what? It actually worked out for the best. I think Adam has set us up beautifully for the day. It's a perfect segue into a topic around strategy and process. Now, quick question. Who here would consider themselves a people person? Hands up. Who likes detail? Oh, there's all these people. Oh, gosh, lots of people. Peoples, that doesn't make sense, in the room today. So who loves detail? Who loves doing planning? We've got one, right? I should leave right now, I reckon, because we're all about planning. Okay, when I spoke to Adam this morning, I said, look, people just don't, like people that are in business or in talking to people don't necessarily enjoy doing the planning. But that can get us unstuck. So 25 years ago, I started up in selling, and I'm sure there's a few people that have been in business here for 25 years ago. And ironically, I was laughing at that thought this morning when my daughter was crying, dragging my leg, saying, Mummy, don't go. And my son was negotiating his iPad. I'm thinking, actually, you start out in sales from the moment you can cry, let alone when you can speak. But starting out in sales, whether it be selling donuts for my first job, printing, where's my printer in the room? It's a bit bright up here. Somebody was in printing, manufacturing? He's gone, has he? So I was also in printing for many years, and then I sold complex solutions. But there was always two things that organisations were looking for. More customers and more revenue and profit. Can you all relate to that? We'd all love more of that. So ironically, 4 years ago when I started up my own business, I was all enthusiastic. All I wanted to do was help SMEs sell more faster. I was really passionate about helping salespeople go from being considered icky or getting that cringe when somebody mentions the word sales to really changing the way that people sell. So here I was all excited, had my briefcase and my ideas in my pocket, and I hired a coach, and the coach said to me, Tanya, you're not in business until you sell something. I thought, oh, that's ironic. I haven't sold anything yet. We're in trouble. And so off I went. So does anybody remember that very first sale? The very first customer. How did it make you feel? Pretty awesome. Did you think, oh, now we're onto it? How long did it take you from the first day?
From the first day.
Yeah.
A little while.
A lot longer than it should have done. Has anyone else suffered from that sort of lag when they've started their business and they're going, I'm not sure what's going on? Now, here I was armed and dangerous. I had an incredibly successful career in sales and in sales management. I was super passionate and super full of purpose. I thought, this is going to be easy. And then I opened my doors. You know, the world of selling has changed and the world of buying has changed. My son's 8 and we're looking at private schools at the moment. And I don't know if anybody knows of anyone who's been to Scots College. And that's on the top of the list. And one of the reasons Scots College is on the top of the list is because the way they sell. They understand us as parents that we have to spend a lot of money to go there, so we want a lot of return. So the process that Scots College has taken up has really been adapted to the way the parents are buying. Now, I've been to, I won't tell you, half a dozen probably, I won't tell you the other ones and what my opinion is of those, but in comparison to Scots College, they took me on a journey of discovery just so I could imagine what my son would come out once he'd been through this wonderful school. They really, really got it. But over the time, most of the companies I've worked with or worked for haven't adapted. Now, we've got things like we've got the internet, we've got post-GFC, we've got lots of things impacting that. But what I find in most SMEs is they haven't changed. Now, I work with a company called Unity Management. They're a business strategy company, and they do a lot of research around planning. And they say 85% of all SMEs do not have a functioning business plan, sales plan, or action plan. Anybody want to challenge that statistic? I probably don't think so. The other thing is we find is everybody agrees that trust is critical. Trust is critical to every relationship we have, whether it be personal or business. And it's certainly critical when we look at this buying, selling process, which is why Scots College has got it so right. And the other thing I've noticed, which is fortunate because that's what my business is about, is that people were still selling in the Zig Ziglar days. So they haven't changed. We don't want to be sold to in this world. And yet I'm up here from a sales perspective to understand how that's different. So the world has changed. So today I'm going to take you on a journey to solve those problems. We're going to tune a strategy in the room today. For those who are people, we're going to do a bit of detail, I'm afraid. We're going to work through it really quickly. And we're going to create this strategy that will focus directly on your revenue and profitability. Then we're going to design a process, a functioning process. Again, more detail, guys, but we're going to try and do it in the room so you don't have to do it back in the office. We're going to get a process where you understand where you can add trust and add value. And along the way, just because it's a natural thing, I'm going to try and ditch some of those Zig Ziglar habits in the room and give you some new ideas on how we are going to present. Now, we're going to have to get Steve to come up and change to strategy. Zig Ziglar is 1960s, 1970s. He was a sales trainer in his day, and he was considered the guru. And we've got a couple of quotes from him. He's quite old. People buy off people that they, or people will listen to people that they like, but people will buy off people who trust, I'm sure. It's a common one that people have heard from Zig Ziglar. And in his time, he was the one who created the door-knocking sales strategy. So very effective in those days, but I'm sure that phone call at 7 o'clock when you're having dinner from the telemarketing, you know, doesn't work, right? Well, hopefully it doesn't work. Okay, so just before we get started, we're going to go through this very quickly. Don't want you to overthink anything. I just want you to get it done. I can see you all running through the book. That's what we're looking for, if you haven't got to it. So we're going to go quickly. You may have heard of some of these things before. And you're going to have to work hard in the session to get the most out of it. But for all the people that don't like the detail, it's great to do it in an hour. The other thing is, guys, I am terribly shocking at referring to a workbook. I am shocking. I'll keep talking and I'll forget to refer to it. So every time somebody catches me out, I'm going to give them a free copy of my book. Okay, so please feel free to catch me out. Now, just before we get started, I'm just going to ask the anybody that's just got a few people on the table to join other people, because it'll be a great way to share ideas. And we're going to do some challenging activities. So there's a couple of people just with one on a table. That'd be great. Okay, we ready to go? So remember, strategy in some cases, has anybody ever done a strategy session in this room? A sit-down strategy session? Yay, one person, great. Okay, a strategy session in a corporation can take up to 5 days. We're going to do it in an hour. So get ready, put your safety belts on, and my computer keeps dying on me. Okay, and the clicker. Let's get going. SMEs without a strategy. What do we see? We see people, I think Steve mentioned this before, we see people selling to everybody. We see people turning up to meetings for people that are not qualified, they're not ready to buy, or they're actually going to never have a need. So we see time wasters. Small to medium enterprises. Oh, okay. Subject matter expert. Yeah. No, small to medium enterprises. Ah, should never use jargon. My apologies. Ta-dong. I've been caught out with that. I had to Google a couple of things the last few days, have to say. So they're either wasting time or money. And it'll cost them a fortune to go through the process to sell. I like the terminology called quote and hope. Many of the organisations will do hundreds of quotes and then they just sit there. Or they have what we call a scattergun approach. So they market to everybody, they approach everybody. And you'll see these very much at networking functions. If you've ever been to a networking function and they're running around and they're handing out their business cards. It's self-sabotage. Because the only thing we can't get more of is what? Time. So we want to get the best out of our time. We want to make sure our strategy is laser focused and that for every minute of your day, you're working on revenue generating ideas, revenue generating activities. Because without the money, we haven't got a business. Without the sale, we haven't got a business. So today, we're going to march quickly through these areas. We're going to look at your customer from a profitability point of view. We're going to get real on your numbers. Now, you might not be able to answer all of this in the room, but everything's in the book for you to do this exercise back in the office if you've got gaps in your information. We're going to understand your market. And Adam talked a little bit about this, and as did Steve, about finding opportunities in your marketplace to sell more to them. We're going to test your offer. Now, Adam gave you a chance to have a compelling offer. Now, the reasons I wanted you to sit all together is because we're going to be annoying to each other and we're going to really challenge that offer. We're going to build a strategy, but a strategy is nothing without tactics. People often talk about this word strategy, but it's not until we go to implementation stage that it's really worthwhile. So, ready to get started. Okay, the process we're going to do is account management, lead, sales and market, data review, and then we're going to build a sales process in the second session. What we're not going to talk about today is sales channels, salespeople, and deployment. So there's a whole other section of this that if you've got a sales team, it will be relevant. If you haven't got a sales team, it's inappropriate, so we're going to leave it out today. Okay. By the end of it, I'm hoping you get something like this. This is an example of with all the client details taken out, and how we would start to build a strategy. So it's not screeds of paper, it's one page. Everybody okay with just one page of paper? Yeah, much better, isn't it? Okay, account segmentation. A wise man called Jack Daly, who's an expert in sales strategy, once said to me, see fewer people, target the money makers. So in your book, I want you on my page 5, flick through to page 5. We are going to look where the money comes from. We're going to give you a few minutes to do this. I want you to consider, and I'll share a story. I did this exercise with a client, and I said, so who's your most profitable customer? And he said, oh, the corporates are. And I said, oh, so tell me about that. He said, oh, well, they spend the most money. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What margin do you get? And he said, oh, actually, that makes me uncomfortable. We don't get very much margin at all. I said, so how long did it take you to sell that person, that corporate? Oh, a year and a half. And I said, so they generate very little profit for you? And it took a whole year and a half to convert? Is there a better way to do business? So I want you to now think about your customer segments and which ones are generating you money. Are they quick decision makers? Do they spend more? Do they give you multiple purchases? So the paintball company, somebody that's got a wide variety of teams and you're taking to the HR person and they're doing team building, fantastic, because you sell to one person and you get to many. And we were talking about the chemical industry. You've got a choice. You sell to the user of the chemical or you go sell to the distributor. Which one makes you more money? So I want you to just give it a few minutes to think about. Find out where your money is. We want to chase the money.
Show me the money.
I'd just like to start with this.
Show you the money.
Oh, no, you can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it, what you would mean it, brother. Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Not show you. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah. Louder.
Show me the money.
I need to feel you, Jerry.
Show me the money.
Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money. Show me the money.
We will leave the rest of it out. Okay, guys, show me the money. Who had a bit of an epiphany and went, ooh, okay, I hadn't really thought of it like that? Or who feels they're actually approaching the right market? They know where the money, great. So it's just the way that we look at it, and many customers don't recognise the way that they look at it. They go, always the big guys are going to be better, but sometimes they're not. It's about, and things, you've got to consider things the way they pay, etc. Okay, so now we're going to define what that person, that segment looks like. And I want you to get very precise. Okay, I want you to get very precise on this. I want you to be able to imagine you walked into a networking event or a party and you're able to pick that person out. We want to know what they're thinking about. We want to know where they hang out. We want to know how they make decisions. What's in it for me or them? So, for example, if you were selling to corporates into procurement, for example, what's in it for them? Savings, because their KPIs say they need to save some money. If it's interior decorating, what's in it for them? A new lifestyle, a new experience, something to show off to their friends. That's what's in it for them. Travel, it's a whole experience. So what's in it for them is those memories, something different, something to show off to their friends. But being clear on what's in it for them will obviously help your messaging, as Adam said earlier. But it also makes sure that you can identify more of those people. Consider how they come to market. Do they phone you? Or do you need to approach them? Is it a push or a pull strategy? That's a big exercise, and if you've ever worked with a marketing company, they'll make you do this exercise. If you can really get to know the person. So, for example, my target market is small businesses with small sales team where there's either a sales manager trying to also sell or the sales team are reporting to the business owner. So there's no structure, no process, no strategy in place. That's my perfect target market. So if they've got no salespeople, not a good fit, they're not going to spend the money. If they've got too many salespeople, then I haven't got the capacity to deal with them. So my cost of sale and my return on my time, because I need to bring in extra people, gets reduced. So my time is my only limiting resource. I want to use it the best of my knowledge. The other thing about my target client is they tend to be 35 plus. an interesting statistic that 80% of all people that buy off you are of similar age or background to you. People buy off people that are a mirror image of themselves. I have a very Gen Y marketing company that's a client of mine, and they only have very Gen Y, and I'm talking sort of 20 to 25 year olds in their sales team, and they're trying to sell to big corporates, and these people are in their 40s to 50s. So they actually put a strategy together to bring on a salesperson that's a little older with a little more credibility because they're easier to sell. So if you don't understand your target market, there's so many strategies that you can build to actually improve it, but it starts with this. Okay. As I said, we're going to go through quickly. You may have to come back to this exercise. Okay, know your numbers. Now, in your book, there's a whole bunch of squares in page 6 and 7. I actually remembered to refer to the book. I'm going to ask you to go through this exercise very quickly. You will not necessarily be able to answer them all, and I don't necessarily expect you to. But this is the key. This is the magic. This is the secret sauce. When we're working with a customer, we will actually go through this exercise and use exactly this template to try to understand not only where they're getting their business currently and what's most effective and where their conversion rates are. So we're on page 6. It says step 2, know your numbers. Okay, so we just need to fill in the gap. There's a few of you that don't know your numbers, and that's fine because of the way that your business is structured. That's fine. Just do what you can, but just keep working through. If you run a business and you don't understand your conversion rates, it'll be the first place to start. We spend a lot of money, and a lot of people talk to me about how do I increase my leads. It's what works for you. So you can spend money on online advertising, and that can bring a lot of leads. But in some cases, people are buying you. And then therefore, doing networking might be more important. But again, if you don't know the numbers, that's okay. But you should know the numbers if you're running a business. So I had a client that sent all their staff doing networking. Networking is a big soak up of time. And when we did this exercise, they were converting one lead a year from networking. And they were spending thousands and thousands of dollars sending their staff to networking. But nobody had actually sat down and done the numbers. I don't know, it's a silly example, but it's happening out there. Okay, so big exercise, don't expect you to do it today, but it's fundamentally how we build your sales process when we work with a team is we figure out those numbers and then we determine which numbers we're going to tweak. Because the number, if we can tweak some numbers, and we'll show you how when we get to the delivery of a strategy, if we can tweak some numbers, we can show you a big difference. And I'll show you at the end what all that means. So it's a take-home exercise at this stage. Now, here you go, a bit more detail. The old SWOT analysis. Does everybody understand what a SWOT analysis is? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Okay, again, 2 minutes. It's a working session, guys. We're gonna work, work, work. Now, if you don't know your numbers, you should know your SWOT. Okay, so table number 1. One of the travel agent ladies. What's an opportunity in your world? Target market is retirees with money, let's hope, and you see that as an opportunity to expand your range.
Yeah, there will be more of these enclosed residential areas. You know, they've got secure areas like living homes and things, and they have a big living area that they have on.
My parents have just signed up to one of those. There's on Harbord Beach actually. They're very nice. What about this table? Where's an opportunity for one of you guys? Terry. Retirees.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. We'll come back to that. So people moving down to Sydney, moving from Sydney down to here. So would they do their refit before they come down?
Some of them come down. Okay, great. We might use that going forward. Okay, what about Aisha?
Okay, so a resource centre for HR, great. So monetising that? Yeah, okay, great. And table at the back here? You're going to make lots of money? Yep. One opportunity from this table. What about yourself, sir? You've all taken your name tags off, so excuse me, I can't.
from my perspective, being a builder, a lot of people are finding that buying houses where they can afford, but it's obviously not what they want, but it's because whatever area it's in. So they're coming down, a lot come down from Sydney to buy like an older sort of house that needs a lot of renovation sort of work, and then they have the family, and they run out of room very quickly.
So there's two people that are targeting and see an opportunity in those people moving down from Sydney. Great, excellent. And girls, one of the ladies on the table? What about from a marketing point of view?
Is it opportunities?
Yeah, opportunities. We're excited about opportunities.
Just that there's a big need for my experience and for their experience that I can bring to mine in this area.
Be more specific on that.
So I've got experience in like international media and marketing, digital marketing, offline, online. And there's a really big need for that kind of wealth of knowledge.
So who's your target market?
Small businesses
that are trying to access the global market.
Yeah. Oh no, that are trying to access the global knowledge of the digital online market.
And how do you monetize that?
Sorry?
How do you make money out of that?
So I manage all their marketing.
Okay. So just SMEs in general, or do you have a particular specialty?
No, just SMEs in general.
Okay.
Actually, girls, I might get you to introduce yourself, because the rest of the groups introduced themselves to us earlier on, and just share a little bit about your business, so if you wouldn't mind.
I'm Susan Bagan. I run a marketing and media agency, helping small businesses in the Illawarra and South Coast.
And I'm Paris Rains. I'm the founder of Climate Girl, which I started when I was 14, and I'm now trying to build it into a global platform for young people to share their own environmental stories from around the world and beyond.
Cool.
And she just won Young Illawarra Woman in Business.
Oh, so congratulations. Well done. Great cause, and starting at 14, that's congratulations. It's wonderful. I wonder if I can get my children to do that. Pay for themselves, okay. So this morning you worked with Adam and you put together a compelling offer. We're now going to play a game. We all like games and it's that time of the afternoon. I'm not going to get you to jump up and down and do a boyer or anything like that. I'm going to get you to be really tough on your neighbour. We're going to do an exercise that says, so what, who cares, and prove it. It's not very pleasant experience for the clients that deal with me. So I had this client, and they rang up and they said to me, we've got an amazing product and amazing service. And I said, oh, good on you. I've heard that all before. So we really want to get out there and sell. And I said, so tell me what your value proposition is. Tell me what makes you unique. Tell me what the clients are going to get. The stuff that Adam was talking to you about this morning. And the first thing they said, well, if they deal with us, we give the best service. And I said, so what? Isn't that a given? Shouldn't you get the best service? So what? I said, who cares about the service? And they said, well, the purchasing people. I said, so are the purchasing people the decision-making people? And they went pale. No, they're not. I said, so you've got a so what value of service, because they couldn't define it as anything but service. It wasn't the fastest online, it wasn't an app held in the store so the people could do it. It was just service, so it was very much a so what. it was the only benefit of their service went to the purchasing people that weren't the decision makers. And then I said to them, so prove it. What statistics, what measures, what net promoter score, which if anybody knows what that is how likely you are to refer this business to your friends and family. Have you got statistics to prove that your service is better than anybody else? Are clients more loyal? Are clients more repeat customers because of your service? And guess what happened? Service is no longer part of their value proposition. Surprise, surprise. So I'm going to get you to do this exercise. And I always frame this with my customers to say, it is not a pleasant exercise because you are put on the spot. But I'm now going to get you to turn to your neighbour. Have we got nearly even? Oh, look at that. How clever are we? We've got even groups. So just turn to your neighbour and I'll get the girls that are from the same company to maybe swap seats around for the exercise. And I want you to say, we give value to our customers in two areas, just two areas. And I want you to ask the question, so what? Who cares? So who's going to care about that value? And I want proof. If you say you can improve productivity by 15%, prove it. That's great that you've got a percentage. We need to be able to prove it. So you can't go out there and say, I'm the very best marketing company because I've said it. You need to be able to prove it. You need case studies, testimonials, statistics. You need to be able to prove it. So quick exercise, 2 minutes. So what? Who cares? Prove it. Who discovered that their value was not so what at all? It was not interesting at all. It's one of the things that people say as I make people. So my husband, he builds investment property portfolios for people. And I remember the first time I heard him say something, he says, we build you wealth. And I said, so what does that mean? You know, it's peace of mind is another thing. People say, I give you peace of mind. I go, ew, what does that mean? You know, what's peace of mind? They mean different things to different people. Yeah. So we turned his value proposition around from creating wealth to growing your investment between 7 to 10% of value year on year. Okay, so there's all your proof. Because they could prove that every single investment property that they purchased grew within 7 to 10% year on year. Now, how much more powerful was growing your wealth? Okay. Can we just have one more from this table? Do you want to talk about the HR training, HR portal, shall we call it?
Yeah. So saving a business owner time and frustration of being able to know exactly where to go and having the expertise and skills to get the answer for business owner a lot quicker.
Okay, so the issue you're going to have is proving it, right? So it all sounds nice in words. We're going to have expert advice and it's going to be very available. But how do we know that it's going to make a difference? You're going to have to prove it. I've got a customer I do a lot in the construction space, believe it or not. And I've got a customer that creates skirtings. You might know them. And it creates skirtings and handrails. And one of the things they do with their handrails is they have this click system. And the click system allows the carpenter and the builders to put it up really quickly. The other thing is it comes together already coated, so there's no painting. So they had no proof, they just knew that rationally that made sense. So what we did is we did a video of the traditional way of putting that up versus their way. And it was literally 4 days to do the other version, and it was 40 minutes to do theirs. So the proof was there. So you do need to prove it. Buyers are really skeptical these days. Buyers don't want to be sold to, and they've heard it all before. I am the world's best sales trainer, yada, yada, yada. Heard it all before. The world's best, I'm the best in the world. Like, really? How do you know that? Can you prove that to me? Who are you judging it off? Where's your numbers? Okay, so make sure that you can substantiate what you're saying. It will give you so much more power in your value proposition if you can get up and say, so the chemicals. So what?
Well, one of the value proposition I put down was streamline the products that you get on hand. So what will increase the safety, storage space, efficiency?
So when you say streamline, just explain in your world what
example,
that means.
We've got four different types of cleaning chemicals. You can reduce just by using different dilutions of the same product.
Okay.
It just makes it safer, it's tidier, storage space. Who cares? Workplace safety orders, people in HR, operations managers, people who have to spend $100 per barrel on 40 different barrels of chemicals are now spending, instead of spending $400, they spend $100 in one hit. It increases cash flow, so therefore, the accountants care about that as well. And to prove it, well, we've got, just list the places where we've got what we've done.
Right, excellent. So when somebody says to you, why would I bother purchasing your chemicals, you can answer that question confidently.
So I challenge you now to do this as a take-home exercise, and every claim you make, every value you put out in the marketplace, do this exercise. Annoying as it is, it's really compelling. And it'll just help you be able to take your compelling offer and articulate it in any situation. It'll also help you with objection handling, because you've thought it through. Because when people were, and also they're risk adverse. So why people were giving you an objection is because they're risk adverse. But if you can prove it, it helps them take away that risk, the feeling of risk. Now, we're not going to go into this, but I'm just going to put it up. There's lots of different ways to go to the market, lots of different sales models, and we're going to look at a consultative sales process later on. But you can have transactional solution, consultative or innovative. I'll make sure everybody gets a copy of this so you know which is right for you. It just changes it, but... Ooh, can't see that really on that screen. So the next step to this is doing the process, which we're going to do after the break, so don't worry about this very complex looking thing. So what is strategy about? Now that we know who we're targeting and what our value is that we're going to take to market, we just got to do more of this. Sounds pretty simple, right? Sounds pretty simple. And then we've got to do something to disrupt the competition. Is it in our proof? Does that disrupt the competition? Because really, strategy is about either finding a new market or taking market share of an existing market. There's really only two strategies. But it starts with a BHAG. Big, hairy, audacious goal. This is just one that was around, a BHAG. So if you haven't set a 2016-17 financial year sales number, I would like you to do that now. You're about to build your strategy. Okay, so on page 11, at the very top, put your number down. Turnover, yeah. Or profit, depends whatever you are looking at doing. Taking more money home. Getting through more money in the door, paying the tax man a little bit extra. He can have a little bit. It should make you feel slightly uncomfortable. Otherwise, it's not big enough. And that's coming from a sales manager saying that. We're always mean to our sales people. And we say, that's not enough. A little bit more, please. A little bit more. Okay. Pick four priorities. Are you going to get more customers the same? So consider your profitable customers. Are you going to get more of the same? Are you going to grow your customer base? Is that one of your strategies? There's a whole heap. Are you going to sell more to the same customers? Have you got products that you can keep selling them to? Repeat orders. Are you going to increase your price? There's lots of people that are going to increase their price. Whew, it might be expensive to live down here shortly. Are you going to bring on a salesperson? Are you going to increase your capacity? Are you going to get more leads and handle them faster? How are you going to take market share? Are you going to differentiate? Are you going to stand out as the experts to the retirement market? Okay, so let's just have a quick look at this exercise here. It's a very simple mathematical equation. If this year in 2016, we got 10,000 leads. If you worked on just a 10% strategy, and this is a strategy I used to use with my sales team all the time, if we can just tweak everything by 10%, what's it going to mean? So let's have a look at the numbers. So if you get 10% more leads, and you get 10%, you convert at a 10% higher level, so you go from a 20% conversion to a 22% conversion of those leads, you're going to have 2,420 customers. If those 2,420 customers buy an extra 0.2 transactions with you, and you increase their average sale, so that might be via price or just you're selling them more, your turnover goes from 400,000 to 585,640. Who in the room here thinks they might be able to tweak something 10%? So one person's going to get that level of growth. 61.05%. By just making this 10%. So 10% is not a lot. It's just doing things a little bit better. It's using people like Adam to get more leads in the door and then have a better qualification and conversion process. Adam's really good at creating those funnels. So maybe he's the man that's going to get you your 10% or more. And he's telling us stories of Sally and he can get you more. What if you've got more things to sell them? So if you're selling them one product now, so for interior decorating, what else could you sell them? Or how else could you leverage your relationships with other people in a joint venture, for example? How could you get people to spend more? Okay, so how's your strategies looking so far? Anybody just put 10% down? Because once you, so remember the exercise about knowing your numbers? If you didn't know your numbers, you need to know your numbers. Because if you look at your numbers and you work out this exercise, figure out what it does to your bottom line. That's why knowing your numbers is so critical, because there is the messages in those that data. And I know we're all people, but at the end of the day, it's the numbers that will show you the story and where you need to work out where your business goes. Okay? So there's lots of blank pages for the numbers. Just check in on that when you get back to the office. Now you need to know how to go to market, whether you go one-to-one or one-to-many. So when we get up and speak, so I spoke to 960 people in a room of small businesses that had at least three salespeople. It took 2 days of preparation and 25 minutes to deliver, and in 25 minutes I got 25 customers. So can you imagine, just from a time point of view, for my business, if I went out to the marketplace and tried to target 25 customers, and I prospected and I visited and they weren't in the market, versus that 25 minutes. So you work out which strategy works best for you. One to many. I've got a great strategy for the builders around this. One to many or one to one. And we're going to talk about some of these in the next session. So you might look at other strategies like increasing your sales time. Steve talked about how you can use the ninjas. I love this line. I've stolen a lot of the stuff I talk about. Automate, delegate, and eliminate. So we can delegate to the ninjas, automate using some online systems, or just get rid of it. Because if you had 10% more time to sell 10% to better quality leads, then what does your business look like? If you retain your customers, we'll go through some statistics later on, by improving your customer service, including your follow-up. When we look at your process, we'll look at this in a bit more detail. Lower your costs of sales using a referral system. Builders, I've got a good referral system that works incredibly effectively. I'll share with you later. Move to an internal team. The costs of having you out selling might not be worth it. One of the ladies up here outsources to a salesperson. You might like to share that information with other people, and they get paid on commission. So unless they sell something, you don't have to pay. So is that a better use of your time? You're better doing something else that you're really good at? Or improve your processes, which we'll talk about later. I just put this up because great strategy, great actions, no timelines, no responsibilities, are just nothing. And that's what the 85% of SMEs have, a nice piece of paper that they put together at the end of every year that they never refer back to. So we're not going to have that, right? We're going to align it. So who here's got salespeople in their business? Anybody? There's a few. So your salespeople should directly link with your strategy. So if your strategy is get more customers, you need to be saying to your sales team, your KPI is to do more lead generating activities. And they need to see the link with the strategy and they need to be giving a timeline. I am going to rush it at the end because we've run out of time and we always run out of time. And here's a couple of hints. That flow chart I showed you in the beginning, which I can't remember if I've still got, the wireframe, use that because salespeople can understand how what they do links with the strategy. Every single target should be achievable, but it also should be measured, and make sure you measure the right thing. We'll talk about that again later. If you have salespeople, they must have individual plans and you must make them sign them off. I cannot reiterate that people, if they haven't taken accountability, they won't do anything. And don't leave your plan in the drawer. Bring it out on a weekly or monthly basis. And you should be able to adapt a plan through the year. It's not set in stone, but at least go back and do it. So you've started your plan today. You just need to fill out those numbers, which everyone struggled with, and do the 10% exercise and see what that means to you. Because that will be about building a strategy. And you might only have to do one or two things to really make a difference to your business in 2016 and 17. So if we take that little wireframe spreadsheet, this is a model that we use in our when we're doing this with a client, is we create a spreadsheet. We look at the financial, customer, internal, and learning perspectives, and then we build the strategy, the objectives, and the measures, and it's all on one page, and it looks something like this. And I'm getting in the head. So that's what I want you to have at the end, and I'm more than happy to help any of you get there. So after the break, we will move on to sales processes, and then this is about how we take that to market. Okay, that was 1 hour on strategy.
All righty, big round of applause, please, for Tanya.